Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 49. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And a special thing today with episode 49 of Forecast, it's Jason Howell's first day at TWiT, and he is behind the board.
Hey.
This is his first time behind the board at TWiT.
Yeah, that's right. I was watching Jammer B kind of jam it out on the switcher for TNT today.
As he
and
does.
I figured, why not just jump into the fire and see how it goes? So
right.
I apologize in advance for whatever that
right.
may
mean. That was by way of not only introducing Jason, but apologizing.
Yes.
our guest today, Eric Mallott. You probably know him better as Fat Emo Kid, co-host of the Pandora Cast, a Doctor Who podcast. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. It's going to be hard to call you Eric. Can I just call you Fat Emo Kid for the whole show?
Yeah, go for it.
People who are not familiar should know it's spelled P-H-A-T. Also joining us, Steven Johnson, a.k.a. Darth Weef, co-host of New Brew Thursdays, a podcast that I have been proud to have been on once. Hey, Steven.
How you doing? I'm happy to be here.
I am happy that you guys are here as well. So this is looking like a good crew. Now, you should know, though, that your predictions are now going to be tracked by Uncle Big Bad.
That's right.
If you folks at home look at blusterer.com, that's blusterer.com, Uncle Big Bad is starting to post all the predictions from our shows. He's using a Squarespace blog. He's got predictions from Tech News Today as well as Forecast. So the latest post is from Forecast 48, and he's got the predictions up that we all made, me and Scott, and Scott McGrew and Terry Michael. So just fair warning about that.
No, well, in that pressure. Case, I'm going to have to change all of my predictions right now.
To accurate ones?
Yeah, to something else completely. So.
Now, we also get predictions from listeners, and we've got a video sent in to us. This was uploaded to YouTube by Ankh. So we'll just let Ankh speak for himself. We don't have to read it.
Hi there, Forecast Podcast. Ankh in Ireland here. And I was thinking about the idea of draining the oceans, or at least the Atlantic. You were talking about what to do with the water, right? So you talked about building up a big vat of water or freezing it and layering it up on the polar ice caps. What I was thinking was, you suck it out into space. So you have a second water moon orbiting the Earth. That way, when we go to colonize other planets, we have all of our water ready and easy to get at. So you got your water and your salt already up in space, ready to go. There you go.
Well, okay.
That's just what I think.
At first I thought he was crazy. And then I was like, well, that's actually not bad. But don't we need some of that water still down here?
Well, look, practically speaking, it probably is just a little bit crazy. But the notion and the visual I have in my head of a floating glob of water up there with the moon someplace, kind of giving us the whole Luke Skywalker 2 moon kind of action at night, that's really, really cool. So I like his idea a lot. But then again, don't we have an issue of like impurities and stuff? Because what this thing is going to do, if I understand my gravitational law very well, is it's going to collect space dust and junk and things that are going to get caught in its own orbit and sort of pulled in. And before you know it, you're going to have a core of like space junk in the middle of the thing.
I believe
and
you I'm call it sure I... space junk like that.
Right, but I don't want to drink that stuff, I don't think, is my only issue. So when I'm on Mars and they bring me a Boda bag full of moon water, I'm going to check twice, maybe boil it. But I like his idea. I think it's cool.
Couldn't be any more polluted than it already is now. So,
good point.
Yeah, well, you got to filter water now. You got to purify it now. That's a good point. We just filter it and purify it on Mars. The hard part isn't treating it. The hard part is getting it there. You can just pour some of that little stuff you buy at REI in there and purify it all on up for you.
I imagine giant. It would freeze instantly, right? Once it got into space, or do we have like some sort of Dyson sphere force field around the water?
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. I in my mind, I'm picturing this water sort of. You could come up and push it, and it would kind of bleh, like a, you know, like water in a space capsule or something, and in that weightless space. But yeah, it would freeze.
Yeah,
all
you got to do is get it up water. There. The question is, how do you get that heavy? Water's heavy. I mean, forget deuterium, which is heavy water. Regular water is heavy. So it'd be the
ultimate snow cone.
Orbital snow cone.
Orbital snow cones for the win.
But exactly. I bring back to the point, don't we need some of that water down here? If we put, this is referring to last week's prediction. I believe it was Terry who said, was it Terry or Scott? I can't remember now.
Terry.
I think it was Terry who said, we get rid of the water in the Atlantic and create more space to live in and farm.
Oh, that was
and
Scott.
All that
yeah, because he had those big, wanted to do those big force fields in the middle of the ocean thing, which was also very cool and visually awesome. But again, it's his prediction's a lot like this one, which is, it's difficult to find the practicality in it. We're going to need that water ourselves unless we figure out a way to take that chunk of ocean and we can purify it to be drinkable. Then that's a different issue. Then storing it somewhere or whatever maybe makes sense. But if it's still ocean water and we still can't drink it and we haven't gotten over that hurdle yet, then it seems like it might be a bit of a waste of time and taxpayer money.
Eric, do you like the idea of looking up and seeing a watery moon in the sky?
Wouldn't it break up before it froze, and then there'd be a bunch of water particles and salt particles floating around while you're flying out in space?
A fresh ocean rain.
Wouldn't that be like like hail in space?
Well, it'd be like a comet. It'd be like you'd have a tail coming off of it
So we're going to create a comet that could then come back to Earth and destroy us all?
I think you've hit upon the problem with this plan.
Yes.
Well, you have to tell. I mean, think Star Trek. You've got something that contains this huge body of water, some big tanker ship. You take it up there.
Transparent aluminum, perhaps.
Maybe. Very good. Aluminium, as the British would say, and you would suck it out with some huge syringe type device, and then you would inject it into space, still space, not while you're in orbit, flipping around the Earth, but while you're just in kind of dead space, just inject that out. It should, in theory, all kind of just coagulate and get bigger and bigger, and you just sort of back away and keep injecting it with all these technologies that aren't invented yet.
Frontline says lasers. I don't know how, but lasers.
always the answer.
I think that's the short of it. Speaking of short, let's go to the short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner than later, maybe the next few years, and we'll start with you, Stephen Johnson. What is your short-term prediction for forecast today, sir?
My short-term prediction is, actually came true, is that my dogs would start barking.
I was going to say, you already made the shortest-term prediction.
The shortest-term prediction ever, and it came true. So I apologize for that. But my short-term prediction is actually going to come true in the next 5 to 10 years. It has to do with the internet. We're seeing a lot of the internet kind of blossoming now, especially in the last year. I think people like my parents who were afraid of the computer 2 years ago are now constantly online. We're seeing a huge mass of people who are coming into the internet, but I think that's going to be used against us, and I think there's going to be some major event that occurs online that scares people off of it for a while and kind of sets us back a little bit.
So you think it's I actually predicted this in one of my top 5 year end predictions, that we'll have such a big malware attack that it will actually change how we architect the internet. And we sort of got that with the DNS poisoning and all of that. So I could kind of technically claim that that one was right. But I was more thinking what you're talking about, which is something that just scares the crap out of everyone. And we all back off a bit.
Right. It kind of sets all the progress that we've made over the last year kind of back just a tad bit, where it's not horrible. I mean, geeks like us who make our living online and do that kind of stuff, we'll get past it and we'll be okay. But the general masses that are starting to come into the internet that are still a little tentative are going to kind of back away, and we're going to see a little bit of a blowback from that.
See, I like the idea of something so major that it creates a complete shift of the paradigm of the internet, because it's going to take that to create something better. What we have now is pretty cool and it's awesome and it served us well. But when it starts to become clear that the system that we have in place for the current internet is no longer going to hold water, no pun intended from our earlier comment, we have to start thinking about how to fix it and change it. And the problem with that is it a lot of times those kinds of fixes and changes mean fundamental changes to the very nature of how the thing is made. And something catastrophic happening, either socially catastrophic, that would really make people shy away from it. We would have to reshape it to be even a viable platform again.
Like two girls, one cup.
Exactly.
Ouch.
Right. Sportfan 1969 pointed that one out.
Oh, because usually that's Tom's first thought, so I thought I figured it was you. But anyway, something physically that happens or whatever. The idea that we'd have to start over or make something truly better is a great idea, but it costs so much to do it. We always have this conversation about when do we get into our flying cars. Well, the minute there's not a huge industry tied to having our cars on the road and chugging on gas, the infrastructure changes are so long-term and so drawn out that I like the idea. I hate the idea, but I like the idea of a catastrophe forcing us to fix it, whatever the fix needs to be. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I kind of see it as an internet version of 9/11, where it's something that's so massively shocking, whether, because, you think about 9/11, it didn't really shift anything as far as how we live our life or whatever. It just changed the way we thought about things. It altered our perception of what it meant to be safe, especially in the United States. So I think the idea that the internet could be attacked in such a way that doesn't necessarily, alter the internet, but it does alter our perception of it. And so, like Scott's talking about, we have to make some changes to shore that up and make sure that people understand that, you can be on the internet safely and you don't have to worry about these things happening again.
It's going to hit the internet so hard, GeoCities will relaunch.
Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe I can get my old files back.
Oh, I know. Seriously. Okay. That's a good one. I think it's fair to say it's quite possible. We could debate how probable it is, but I hate the idea of something like bad like that happen. But then I sort of like the sort of post-apocalyptic terrain of the internet afterwards
house burning down, right? So let's say I come home tomorrow, the whole house is destroyed. It's the most terrible thing that could happen, and it would just be ugh. But then there's this tiny part of me that would be like, wait, I've got a fresh slate. I can just start totally new, right? I can do all this stuff over again. There was insurance, so we're okay there. So maybe that's an issue. You don't have to have an analogy for that tied to how the internet works. But with that insurance, you can start over and do some things right maybe you didn't like before. So it's
maybe a bunch of trolls got scared off permanently.
Right.
Well, that's a great point, though, because how much of the internet is actually patched together? How many bad decisions were made in the 70s and the 80s as we started building up this network and this infrastructure? How many of those things could we actually change if we were given that clean slate with the information that we have now? I mean, look at even IPv4 standards. Whoever thought that they'd run out of IP addresses? And yet, here we are with a new standard for that. And it's still patched together. So it'd be interesting to see what they could do with a clean slate and start over again.
Have y'all read When Sysadmins Ruled the Earth?
Mm-mm.
It's a Cory Doctorow story that anybody who's liking this idea, is fascinated by this idea of a post-apocalyptic internet, should check that out. It's essentially something horrible happens, and you don't know what it is at first, but people in data centers actually survive what happens. And so all these sysadmins are essentially communicating with each other over the internet, which is still operational. And figuring out how to reconstruct society. It's an awesome story.
Why should we wait for this catastrophic event? How come we just don't reboot the internet right now?
For the same reason that Scott doesn't tear his house down completely to rebuild it.
Right, because it seems scary.
It's always
it
good to start,
hard.
Refresh yourself, start something new.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we all sort of fed this in the 90s, we kind of got this idea that the Internet 2 was going to be built in parallel. And then when the day came, we could all just kind of go and hop over and everything would be normal and fine. I don't think any of that holds, again, water now. But if that idea were true, I think that's a great way to do it. I don't think stuff works like that. I think the infrastructure is way more complicated than we think it is. And I don't mean just the technology that makes the internet run. I mean, where are these servers? Where is that backbone? Why is that truck on top of that place where that server is? That's dangerous. How come that battery backup won't work now? There's so many little pieces that feed into the bigger picture that it would be like trying to change something as big as, say, you know, getting ourselves out of Iraq. It's a mess. It's not a simple over the weekend we'll just sneak out when nobody's looking kind of arrangement. It feels like it would be something on that level, something that big.
All right, let's
move
on.
Can we just get Al Gore on the phone?
Hey, you invented the last one. Can you invent another one? All right, Eric, it is your turn for the short-term prediction. When you look through the haze into the next few years, what do you see looming at us?
I actually see a cure for psoriasis. We're so close right now for it. For those who don't know what psoriasis is, it's a skin disease. It attacks your immune system, and you get these flaky white scales on your skin. And there's right now there's no cure for it. There's ointments and stuff that you could get from your doctor and your dermatologist. But like I said, there's no cure for it. So except for this drug called Enbrel, and Enbrel totally is like a miracle drug for people who have psoriasis. And I think what they're doing is they're taking that drug and they're building upon that to find a cure for it.
So it just treats the symptoms, Enbrel. It doesn't actually cure the underlying cause.
Hopefully it doesn't cure the underlying cause, but hopefully within the next few years, they integrate some other drug with Enbrel and it cures psoriasis forever.
This is an interesting one because we often get predictions cure cancer, cure AIDS, mm-hmm. you know, but
yeah.
you don't hear about this disease in particular, probably because it's not a fatal disease, right? It's just ruins your life.
No. It pretty much does. A lot of people with psoriasis have very low self-esteem. Like myself, I don't even own a pair of shorts because I have it pretty bad on my legs. So a cure would definitely help a lot of people with low self-esteem and who are depressed because they have it.
Are we close to something like that, you said? I mean, are they within the distance of testing that kind of thing?
Yeah, they're constantly testing new types of drugs and all sorts of stuff like that. Hopefully, you know, within the next 5 to 10 years, hopefully.
Now, well, so that's interesting. I'm glad you laid out, put focus on something that some may say, well, that's not as big a deal as cancer or as ALS or as all these, you know, horrible, mm-hmm. terrible diseases. But I think it's too bad sometimes that the smaller stuff gets left in the shadow, because oftentimes, at least history has shown us this, when the smaller stuff gets tackled and beaten, typically we mm-hmm. learn so much from that. That it kind of has a trickle-up effect and you end up being able to tackle bigger stuff and just tweak the treatment here and go, oh my gosh, that thing that worked for that guy's bad toe is now solving everyone's pancreatic cancer. You know, it's not that, obviously it's not quite that easy, but it seems like they feed into each other. So I like that. Would be great. I know a lot of people that suffer from that stuff. It's terrible.
And Charles points out, why not shoot for all autoimmune diseases like lupus, for instance? And that's what Scott's talking about, is like maybe if you target in on something like psoriasis, you start to figure out how it works and you can apply that to arthritis, to lupus, to autoimmune diseases. You know, AIDS is a little bit far off from how these things work, but anything where the body is attacking itself is fundamentally similar. It's like saying cancer. There's actually different kinds of cancer. And so when we cure one kind, or we get close to curing one kind, it does help us figure out ways to attack the other kind. So I like it. It's a good prediction. You know what? And we get a lot of funny predictions. We get a lot of crazy predictions. We have a category for the crazy predictions. But this is a hopeful prediction. We need more of those.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's move on to our long-term predictions. These take the longer view. They're more the in 100 years we'll all be in flying cars sorts of predictions. And Eric, we'll stick with you. When you look farther down in the longer term, what do you see?
Well, a little backstory on my long-term prediction. I work for a company called BioQuip, and we produce and manufacture goods for people who collect and study insects. And what I've noticed within the past 2 to 3 years is a larger concern for bed bugs. And we dealt with this back in, I believe, the early 60s or 70s. And we got rid of the problem here in America. And then Just lately, we've noticed a larger rise in bed bug around the nation.
Yeah, I heard it's really a problem in New York in hotels right now.
Yes, definitely. So I see the bed bug situation to get a lot worse before it gets better.
And especially with that big, huge bulletin board that you have near your house that has the huge bed bug on it. That always frightens me when I go over to your place. It's like,
I heard something on NPR just recently on Fresh Air, some interview or something. They were talking all about bed bugs and how bad it had gotten, and that most of us just don't even know they're there. And they started talking about ways to sort of know that they're there and ways to treat it. And that whole interview just scared the crap out of me. I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, for everybody who does travel, there's a couple tips that you take. Don't put your luggage next to your bed. Keep it at least 3 to 5 feet away from your bed. Check the back of the headboard in the hotel room, or check the mattresses for dark spots. If you come across those, then that hotel room has bed bugs.
I swear to God, I'm just sleeping on the floor of hotels from now on.
Always sleep in an encased plastic net.
Well, it's funny because when I moved back out to Los Angeles, the two things that my dad told me was never buy used tires and never buy a used mattress. Mm. And they are prolific all over Southern California. You drive down the street and there's people that have used tires with their used mattresses that they're selling, and people buy these things. And that's why these bed bugs are spreading. Stop buying those things.
So your prediction, Eric, is that this is not a temporary problem. It's just going to keep getting worse for a long time, huh?
Yes, because a lot of people really don't understand about this stuff. They never even heard of bed bugs before. But talk to your grandparents, and if they're still around. And they'll tell you about the bed bug outbreaks back in the 60s.
Well, yeah. it's a common thing to have been tucked in as a kid. You know, sleep tight, don't let the bed bugs bite. You know, you don't hear that no more. So,
well, yeah, what are you supposed to do? Don't let them bite. Get them out of my bed. It's not up to me.
Yeah, don't forget to take infrared lighting in your room and check every corner first, and then go to sleep. And
sleep
then
tight. Move your luggage away.
Doesn't really.
All you need is a black light.
Well, I used to sell Kirby vacuums, and we were required to use the bed bug threat as a sales tactic to show them how to vacuum the bed bugs off their pillow and their bed. So that was always really gross, but you know.
I just slather myself with DEET every night before I go to bed. Is that you think that's a bad idea?
That smells real good.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, just a quick follow-up. Someone in the chat room logged in as a guest suggested that all that really needed to happen to bring the internet down and to make us rethink it would be anyone who runs the main DNS servers in this country, just switch them off.
Oh, yeah.
Messes up pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why all that DNS poisoning from Conficker was such a problem.
Yep. If that happens and anybody wants to watch Newbert Thursday, I'm willing to give you the IP address of the server. Just so everyone knows.
All right, let's
follow me on Twitter, 0.5.0.1.
Chat room's getting a little itchy, so we're going to move over to you, Stephen. When you look into your long-term prediction lens, what do you see through your telescope of futurism?
Mine is actually a rebound off of my first one. I think that once the internet gets taken down and everybody gets freaked out about it, and all the safeties are kind of put back in place and it's rebuilt properly, everybody's going to flood back on it as though it never happened. And sites, not Twitter, not Facebook, but sites that have kind of grown from those kind of offsprings will be responsible for creating a utopia-like world government online where we allow the people who are guiding and directing us via the internet world. You know, I'm looking at Leo, I'm looking at Tom, no offense, to lead us. And we have a huge internet style government put in place based off of the unifying force that is social networking.
Are you sure you haven't read When Sysadmins Rule the Earth?
I haven't, honestly. I really think I want to, because it sounds like it's something that I could really buy into, because this is, you know, I've always felt like Twitter is, I've met some of my closest friends that I have at this point in my life are all from people that I met over Twitter and Facebook. And so I really think that social networking, when used properly, will create that style of connection and unifying force, and we'll overcome the trolls and the haters that are on the internet, and we'll create this like utopian online society that will become better than the governments that are around on the earth today. And so people will look to that for their leadership. And battles will be taking place on the Warcraft front instead of the actual battlefield.
All right. Well, see, now that has come up a few times on this show, this idea that future wars would be fought in a virtual playing field, or at the very least, we had a really great prediction, and I cannot remember who it was from, but somebody said it would be great if we could sort of control robots on a virtual chess field, basically, but it would be this huge battle area that we would all as nations agree that this is where we fight it out, and we would have giant robots fight. We would all control it from a very safe distance, and everybody would kind of be held to these rules that if your robots lost, then we win and we get whatever demand we had, and there's something that really appeals to me about that. But I think we're definitely heading into an era sooner or later that is a much more where conflicts are handled virtually. And that already, you already see that happening now. I mean, how many times, let's say in the 60s, if you had to go talk to your boss, you had to go into his office and you had to figure out a way to bring up the concern, and you had to have all that awkward stuff back and forth. Nowadays, you can send an email with very sort of, you know, succinct sense of how you're feeling and what makes you mad and why you're going to quit or why you need a raise or whatever. And it takes away all of that interpersonal stuff, and could argue that's a terrible idea, and that that's unhealthy for us as a society. But regardless of whether people think that or not, we're totally heading that direction. It seems like that kind of feeds into your prediction.
Well, how awesome would it be to see Obama and Kim Jong-il playing D&D for whatever their issues are and having him attack with his level 12 mage and winning? And so it's like, oh, it's done. All right. And then they move on, and, you know, whoever won gets what they wanted.
I'm glad you didn't say StarCraft, because then Kim Jong-il would probably own us.
Plus, who would be the dungeon master, just theoretically here, between these two? So you've got
Madeline Albright.
All right. Standing behind the little
Honestly, I think it would have to be somebody like Will Wheaton. Will Wheaton would have to be the dungeon master.
Actually, he'd be a great dungeon master. He'd be perfect for that job.
I
vote Will Wheaton for worldwide conflict resolution dungeon master.
Exactly. His mantra, don't be a dick. So how does that not win?
Exactly. That is a wonderful principle upon which to govern an anarchic relationship of countries that solve their problems in the dungeon. Leave it in the dungeon, folks.
Kim Jong-il will have some problem with Wesley Crusher as a character, and the whole thing will fall apart.
Shut up, pre-game. Wesley!
He'll have his Die Wesley Die t-shirt on, and so that'll actually help, because then Wesley will kind of not look at him. So,
well, maybe we'll hold this idea till Kim Jong-un, his son, who is supposed to be next in line to take over. Maybe when he takes over, while he's new at the job, we're like, oh, no, this is the way we've always done it.
Yeah. Maybe he won't be so wrongry. Sorry. I had to get a Team America reference in there somewhere.
I'm glad you clarified that was a Team America reference.
Yeah, it's not just a racist joke. It's a Team America reference.
It's not just a racist joke. It's also a reference to a racist joke movie.
Yeah. Easy on the craft beer, Steven.
All right. I like it. I like this utopia world governed from the internet, but you have to read When Sys Edmonds Ruled the Earth now. Let's move on to our crazy ass predictions. These are really far out, either in time or in craziness. My example is usually in 2000 years, we'll all be made of cheese, for instance, would be kind of a lame one, but that's the example of what we're going after. And Steven, we'll stick with you. What is your crazy ass prediction?
Well, I think that we're going to eventually learn how to leave our bodies in a ethereal sort of sense. Not so much like an ascension style thing from Stargate or, you know, that kind of thing, but just more of like exist outside of our physical corporeal beings. And we'll use the physical beings that are made for us through cloning or whatever to enjoy recreation and or physical aspects. So like, you know, if I'm kind of bored one day, I go into one of my bodies and I go jump off a cliff to experience dying that way. Or, you know, I go into my body to have sex with somebody or whatever. It's more of a recreational thing to be in the physical form, but we exist in like a non-corporeal, extension of ourselves. And I see that happening in about 3,000 years.
Oh, it's a pretty good prediction. Yeah, we've. I think about this all the time. Like, what would it be like if I could? And you think of movies that do this, and there's a ton of them that do this. But this idea that I could somehow pull my consciousness out of myself, travel around, do other stuff, and now distance and travel and all that stuff doesn't have an impact. I can be here 1 second and be in France in 5 minutes or something. And I really like that idea that I could move around like that. The issue I have is, would we, in your mind, would we have to achieve a certain level of human maturity, I guess is a good word for it, where we could use this crazy new power for good? And if that's the case, would we even bother with the physical body? I mean, would we even feel like, you know what I miss back in the 2000s when I could eat chicken? Let's go get in a body and eat chicken.
I think that the sci-fi world has always put the ascension aspects of things that when they kind of go into their spirit form as a spiritual side of things, so they have to like achieve that maturity, like you're saying, or whatever in their mental minds so that they can do this. I see it as a technological advancement. It's going to be something that happens. It has nothing to do with us being better people. So we're still going to have all of our base cravings, all of those things that we want to do that we don't do because we're not corporeal anymore. And that's why we're going to go back to that. And I don't think we're not going to be necessarily any better than we are now. But I see it kind of just being a technological advancement. And there'll probably be a holdout, people in Montana that do not leave their bodies, that just live out their lives and die in their physical form because they, you know, refuse to accept that.
Well, we have this already, right? We have a lot of nostalgia things, right? Where you can go ride a horse for fun. You don't need to ride. You don't need to ride a horse anymore, right? You can drive anywhere. You can fly places, but people like to ride horses. Or in the more extreme case, like you're talking about there, we have like the Mennonites and the Amish who live very simply on purpose because they feel like they get something out of that, that it's a better way to live. And so that makes sense that, you know, you'd have people who are like, I'm not going to leave my body at all. And you'd have people who are like, oh yeah, I want to try out being in a body again. That's a kick. You ever go to one of those ranches where you can be in a body?
Remember when Grandpa used to tell us those stories about being in his body? Let's go try that out.
So. Well, I mean, we have a lot of hunters around where I live. I live out in the West Desert part of this part of the valley, and there's a lot of people are really into hunting, so they're getting their four-wheelers, and they're going hunting all the time, and there's lots of area up here with huge deer, and deer season just kicked in, and so half my neighbors are gone all the time, and I'm not into that stuff at all, but I'm always reminded that they're doing something they don't actually have to do. Like, this is not, it is no longer a survival technique. It is no longer something they have to do. They're doing it for the pure enjoyment of it. So the idea that there'd be a future where, out of our bodies or not, we're going to still crave those things that are maybe instinctual to our nature that we don't maybe need at all, but we are going to do them anyway to, you know, and that could be anything. That could be sex. Maybe we don't need sex anymore because these little globs of air are just sort of walking around reproducing as we please or whatever. And so all this stuff is for recreation. So boop a chicka wow wow is what I say. That sounds like a good time.
Boop a chicka wow wow. That's probably the most awesome thing I've ever heard in my life.
we're talking about the idea too that you just use your body when you need it. Theoretically, you could use anybody's body, right, Stevie?
Yeah, because that's I think that the idea is that rather than like the physical act of procreation where you give birth, that bodies, which are just, you know, recreationally purchased, would be cloned, created that had no sort of sentient value whatsoever. And you would occupy those bodies, do with them as you please. And if you brought it back and could be reused, awesome. If you threw it off a cliff and it was in 15 pieces, then obviously you couldn't bring it back. So you'd lose your deposit. But, you know, those would be, you know, it's like a library for body parts.
Please recycle. Don't just throw away your body. So if you could have any, would you do this, Eric? If you could just, you know, jump into any body you want, or would you stay incorporeal?
I would not jump into somebody else's body. I don't want to know what that's like.
So you'd have one body that you'd use all the time that's yours, or you wouldn't want to go corporeal?
Yeah, I'd use the body that I came onto this earth with. I don't want to jump into somebody else's body and have them have some sort of heart attack or something like that.
You dance in the one that brung you.
Yes.
To paraphrase.
Well, so who would you, Tom, I ask you a question. Who, if you had to choose someone's body to jump into, famous or not, who would it be?
I feel a little bit like Eric here. It's like, you know, as much as I got this pain in my shoulder, I'm kind of used to this one. I know how it works. I don't know. That's kind of weird operating some other body, but I'd probably try him out. I don't know what it's like to be in another body, so I don't know. I don't know. You know, I'd have to figure out, like, all right, I'm going to try out a big old strong guy. Now I'm going to try out a lady and just see, you know, see what it's, take it for a spin.
Cross-dressing on a whole new level.
Yeah. Why not? Just check it
personally,
out.
Personally, because I feel like I'm talented but unattractive, I would jump into Megan Fox so that I could see what it's like to be attractive but not talented.
Yeah, but then you'd have those weird thumbs she has. You seen those thumbs?
Those thumbs, yeah. The thumbs would creep me out, but, you know, maybe we could, like, mix and match body parts.
All right. Let us move back to you, Eric. Your crazy ass prediction, your far out forecast. Lay it on us. What do you got?
My crazy prediction is that Steve Jobs shuts down all of Apple operations and returns to Microsoft.
Returns? He's never been there.
I thought he worked for Microsoft for like 2 seconds.
I don't think so. No.
He worked at Atari for a while.
No, he worked in the cafeteria, I'm pretty sure. I'm just playing. Nah.
But so Steve Jobs shuts down Apple and goes to Microsoft.
Yes. And takes over Microsoft.
You're crazy.
A Zune we can use.
Oh, come on.
A Zune we can use. Yep. See, this is Eric's attempt to really point out that he loves Apple, even though he wants to be the hater. Because he knows the only thing that's going to make Microsoft useful is if Steve Jobs eventually gets over there and starts taking care of business.
No.
So let's say that's kind of sounds crazy, but the idea that isn't that crazy, let's say in another decade, let's say Microsoft's market cap is just crap, their Xbox division takes a dump, their phone stuff tanks, Bing is no more. What the idea of Apple buying or merging with a company like Microsoft isn't that far-fetched. I mean, it was crazy to think that Microsoft would help bail Apple out in 97 or whatever it was, and they did that. So crazier things could happen. I, you know, this isn't that crazy. It may not be Jobs and Gates may not be still around, or may not be, you know, Ballmer anymore, but it could be guys who say, maybe together we're a better company. And then if they can get through all the antitrust stuff, they would, you know, maybe they're the big juggernaut company. That's not that crazy to me.
But that's not what you're saying, is it, Eric? You're saying Steve Jobs shuts down Apple and goes to Microsoft wins this battle. It's not Microsoft folding and Apple buying it.
Exactly. Apple just is off the map now. No more iPhone, no more Macs, nothing.
I'm gonna channel the chat room and tell Eric just to say it. Say Mac is whack. Just do it.
Mac is whack.
That's there you go.
Mac is whack.
Now
that's what he's been trying to say the whole time.
Crazy ass predictions have no rules. They can be crazy, and this certainly qualifies as crazy. But do you have a scenario under which this happens? Is it I mean, because honestly I can handle the idea of like Apple just makes a bunch of mistakes and goes into the red and there's a scandal and Steve Jobs has to shut it down for whatever reason. That's way out there. It's crazy, but it's possible. But then him going to work for Microsoft, what induces him to do that? Because you figure at this point if he leaves Apple, he retires.
Bankruptcy.
It's a crazy whatever prediction.
It's a, yeah,
he
okay
just leaves. He has some sort of midlife crisis and decides to go back. Decides to go to Microsoft.
Right, right.
Steve Jobs decides he's Microsoft for pay.
I think it's Bill Gates using Steve Jobs' body.
There, now that is possible. Yeah, you can see that.
Somehow he aces him out. Like Steve goes on a little, you know, non-corporeal trip. Bill slips in. You know, slips the guy a couple thou, takes
like, man,
over.
I lost some weight. All right, yeah. I'm going Microsoft. Woo!
We're shutting down Apple. You're going to love it. It's amazing. Microsoft.
You're going to have to get a PC, Tom.
Huh? I've got a PC. I've got the best Windows machine ever right here. My MacBook Pro.
Amen to that, brother.
Fail.
Best Windows machine I've ever used. And I actually have a Gateway Windows desktop at home that I use for gaming. So,
yeah, I have a gaming PC.
I live across borders.
I'm playing Civ 5.
I am playing Civ 5 on my Gateway desktop. Works great. Windows Vista, even, mind you.
Whoa.
Ouch.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Let's not go that far.
I haven't gone farther than that on that machine. I got Windows 7 on here. Yeah. I got Windows Vista on the desktop. Right. It's all going to be, you know what? It's all going to be Ubuntu in the future anyway.
God, I hope not.
No.
I'm a huge Linux fan, but I just don't think the world is ready for Ubuntu as a desktop across the consumer market.
All right. It is time for four questions. This is the segment where each of our guests face four rapid-fire questions about the future. You should not stop and think. Just answer with whatever comes to mind. Free association time.
Indeed, and I have the first set of questions for Stephen. Stephen, we always ask our guests, are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
What I
am
tell
sitting
you
comfortably.
Good, and your dog's been great. No problem.
Yeah, I keep muting when I need to, but yeah.
So. All right, cool. All right, here you go. Rapid fire style. First question is, under what future circumstances would the world admit that the best last name is Johnson?
World where the Big Johnson campaign never occurred.
All right, fair enough. If you could have one beer with you right now.
And he does.
And he does. What would it be?
Oh, I knew that was going to come up. Pliny the Elder, Russian River Brewing Company.
All right, very nice. In your parallel universe, what would be different about you apart from the goatee and the gun you're packing everywhere? But you have a goatee, so this kind of ruins this. But anyway, yes.
Wow, what would be different about me? Nothing. I'm perfect.
Would you be evil? Would you be...
I am evil.
Would the parallel universe you not have the beard? That's what everyone asks me now.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think in the parallel universe, I would have a goatee, not just the beard. I would shave off this stuff here and just go with the goatee. So
you'd be rocking the Spock.
Goatees are evil. We all know that, so...
Your last question is as follows. Where will the cigarette lighters be in our flying cars?
Ooh. I think that by the time we have flying cars, people will be smart enough not to smoke anymore, so we won't have cigarette lighters. We'll have actual AC plugs that we can use.
Oh, your answer is correct.
Can you can you imagine if we just had plugs? Just regular plugs?
Just regular plugs.
That is the jankiest thing ever, that we still use cigarette lighters to power everything in our car that isn't part of the car.
That's crazier than Steve Jobs leaving Apple for Microsoft.
That's right.
All right. Eric, a.k.a. Fat Emo Kid, are you sitting comfortably?
Yes, I am. I have a beer right here.
Good. Then we'll begin. Question number one. What fuel will power our eventual conquering of the solar system?
Probably potatoes.
I like this. A good answer. It's an excellent answer. I have been working on a graphic novel with Len Peralta called Tent Town, and they actually power their gadgets with potatoes.
Really?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, what? So instead of a gas crisis, we'll have a blight. Is that what'll happen?
Yeah.
We can't get
the blight crisis of 2035. Question number two, what would Apple have to do to make Mac not be whack in your eyes?
Well, this is a whole podcast all of its own.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have a couple hours?
Question, you're supposed to answer from the gut.
Oh, man, this is...
Stop thinking and answer.
That is difficult. Not be whack. I would have to say, not be so locked down. Like, I don't like that their systems are all, you know, I don't like that Apple wants you to use their operating system the way that they want you to. Me as a consumer, I want to be able to use it the way I want to use it. I want to change things around and screw with the OS.
Which you can do, actually.
Yeah, you can do all that.
Darwin.
You're talking about like iPhones and stuff?
Yeah, but...
Oh,
yeah,
iOS. But yeah, definitely. All right.
Yeah,
iOS. Right. Question number three. How many doctors before the doctor finally passes on?
Oh, hopefully 16.
16. We're at 11? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we got five more. Good. Oh, I wish it was more.
Isn't 13 the limit, though?
They've worked around that, actually.
Oh, they have.
I can't remember what the backstory is, but they adjusted that when they got to 11. They're like, we might need more than 13, so let's figure this out.
This might be a successful show.
Yeah. And question number 4, will I drink this tequila?
Yes, you will.
I think
he's right.
Is there a worm?
Oh.
Fastest prediction to finish ever.
This one's for you, Tom.
Here, Jason, I poured you one, too.
What's that cool futuristic glass? It's like something off of Uncle Owen's farm and sitting around with Aunt Vru talking about power converters. Look at that thing.
And for those watching the video, this is Don Ramon that Fat Emo Kid bought me for Buzz Out Loud's 1,000th episode.
Oh, wow.
So
you mean you still have that?
I don't feel right drinking it when he's not around.
Understood.
Scott, have you ever felt more left out in your entire life?
Oh, my gosh. We can't, as you know, we can't even get fruit in this state.
All right. Thank you both for being on the show. This was really fun.
I had a blast. Thank you.
Steven Johnson?
I absolutely had a great time as well.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm glad you had as much fun as I am having now that I drank that.
that didn't take long.
Steven Johnson, we'll start with you. Johnson's first, as always. Tell folks where they can find you on the internet.
I am available on newbrewthursday.com every Thursday. You can also find me there throughout the week because we don't do live shows. We just put it up there. So it's available all week long. You can also find me riffing Doctor Who stuff with Eric at pandoracast.com. And we don't have the explicit tag restrictions that Forecast does. So it gets a little more crazy. But we do have Vanita who shuts us down. So
you have your built-in filter. That's good.
Yes, we have our built-in filter. So, but yeah, PandoraCast for the love of geeks.com. I do some podcasting over there as well. And I also do New Brew Thursday.
And Eric, a.k.a. Fat Emo Kid Malat. Do I say your last name right? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, it's a French last name, but we like to pronounce it Malat.
Okay. Where can folks find you? I mean, I know you're on PandoraCast as well.
Yeah, you could find me on PandoraCast. Just go ahead and follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/FatEmoKid. That's PhatEmoKid.
Excellent. And
I'm on another.
Go ahead. Keep going. We lost the audio there for a second.
Okay. You could check the G-Men Show out at gmanshow.com.
G-Men Show. All right.
Yeah.
Scott Johnson, another successful Forecast, I think.
I don't even know what to do with myself. It was freaking amazing. And also, it's nice to have a guy on the show whose name is Steven Johnson because I always get mistaken as Steve. People call me Steve all the freaking time. So I want to know just one last question for you today. Do you get called Scott occasionally?
I do, actually. I get called Scott Johnson occasionally, yeah.
What is up with that? That is the freakiest freaking thing. But anyway, it was great having both you guys on. Quick mention to people, let them know that they can catch Tom and I every Friday night on Current Geek Weekly right here on Twit as well. That's at 7 p.m. Eastern right here on the Twit Network. And can't wait for that as well. But had a great time today, Tom.
Yeah, you know what? I just realized when you said that, this is a moment in podcasting history for me personally because you, Scott, and Steven both would write in to Buzz Out Loud. And I used to it took me a while to realize it wasn't the same. Like, oh, that's Scott, and that's Steve, and that's different Johnsons.
It's even worse. It's even a more tangled web.
Well, because it's an S Johnson, right?
One day hope to follow in Scott's footsteps and become an amazing podcasting superstar.
I had this problem with Jonathan Coulter and Jonathan Colton as well.
Well, I can see that one. I could see, but this for my whole life, it's like, well, hey, Steve. It's happened on this show where people forget my name and call me Steve in this show. So I don't know what's up with that, but I'm happy to move forward, smiling all the ways, and I'm really happy to have Idaho with us. So welcome, Jason, to the Twit team.
Thank you,
Boise, represent.
It's awesome to be here. Thank
Eric,
you so much.
I think it's a phenomenal thing that we were allowed to be the very first show that Jason did for Twit.
I think it's appropriate.
I'll hold that near to my heart forever.
Absolutely. You know,
Idaho is Utah's hat. Let's not forget.
Yeah, no kidding. That's so very true in so many ways.
And a pointy hat it is.
That's right.
Don't forget to leave comments at our website, folks, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. You can leave us predictions at either place. We read them all, and we read one on the show, but we read them all personally. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Dang it. I totally forgot the outro music.
We'll fix it in post. He did it again. We can hear that. That's amazing. Oh, well. I can do it.
All right, I'll stop.
It sounds like Fred Astaire is in your house.
We never knew it. He is.